Okay, let's call this meeting of the Department of Environmental Conservation and Finance Subcommittee to order. Let the record reflect that time is currently 10:10 in the morning on Thursday, February 9, 2017. Present today we have Representative Wool, Representative Klayman, Representative Johnson, Representative Johnson, Representative Rauscher, who I saw, there he is, and myself, Representative Foster. And before we start today, I'd like to remind everyone in the room to please silence their cell phones. This morning we'll be hearing overviews from the Director of the Division of Air Quality, Denise Koch, as well as the Director of the Division of Spill Prevention and Response, Kristen Ryan. And also with us this morning are Tom Cherian, Director of Administrative Services at the Department of Environmental Conservation, Ruth Kostick, the Department's Budget Manager, and then we also have with us Alexi Painter, our Fiscal Analyst with Legislative Finance Division. And I'd also like to ask members to maybe hold off on questions until the end, unless it's a clarifying question, and that will give the folks here time to get through their presentations. And let's see here, what else do we have? And then finally, I'd also ask the department to please use the full title of programs or entities before referring to them by their acronyms. And with that, we'll be hearing from Denise Koch with the Division of Air Quality first. And Director Koch, if you could please come to the table and put yourself on the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Denise Koch. I'm the Director of Air Quality for the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. So the Division of Air Quality's mission is to protect and conserve Alaska's natural resources and environment in order to enhance the health and safety of people in the state. And the way that we do that has several prongs. We issue air permits to large stationary sources. We also conduct monitoring. And we also work hand-in-hand with communities to identify air pollution concerns and work together with communities on air pollution concerns. So this is just a little bit more information about what we do. Air permitting has several facets. There are what are called Title I permits, and those are permits that we issue to industries and businesses before they can do construction projects or before they can make major modifications on some of their projects. There are also Title V operating permits, and those are for ongoing operations. There is the Air Nonpoint and Mobile Source Program. It's also within air quality, and I think of that as a planning group. That's the group that, for example, partners with the Fairbanks North Star Borough to work on fine particulate matter PM2.5 pollution issues. And we also work on things like rural dust and other items there. Our third program is air monitoring and quality assurance. And they conduct monitoring throughout the state to see how we're doing in terms of measuring our air quality and how it does against national air quality standards. So this is the information about our budget, and I think that there are a couple of items that I wanted to add and augment here. In this other category that you see, this over $4.4 million, most of that, so over $4 million of that, is our Clean Air Protection Fund. That's the acronym CAPF on that. On that pie chart, and those are permit fees for Title V permitting. And federal law requires that Title V, that permitting program, be 100% fee supported. So that's the majority of that purple other slice of the pie. The other item I wanted to mention I think is very important is for the UGF portion. So our over $1.7 million we receive from the state in UGF, but over $1.4 million of that is money that we need to match. We have to spend every penny of that money in order to get the federal dollars that are in the federal receipts portion. So that actually leaves us less than $280,000 in truly flexible money. So this is a summary of our budget changes. In the governor's proposed FY18 budget, air quality will receive a reduction of over $160,000 in our UGF. And the other items, the other three items that are listed on this slide are really technical adjustments that are aligning our authorities with our actual budget. So for some of the reductions and changes that we've made over the last few years, we have been trying to, like many divisions, been trying to get leaner. We have taken several reductions over the past several years. We have done this by we've reclassified some positions into lower range positions. We've combined components. And we're always looking to be more efficient, and that's what that last bullet is about. We did a lean process over the last year, and that's a process where you evaluate a particular process, and we pick permitting, and you try and see if you can make that that process better and more efficient. And I do want to say that we did get some efficiencies. We reduced the time it took us to issue our Title I permits. So I'm on slide 8 for that discusses our non-fee versus our fee portion. So once again, we are mostly fee supported. That includes our permitting program, our Title I construction permits, and our Title V operating permits. We are required to, by statute, to review our fee structure every 4 years, and we most recently did that in September 2015. I've covered this a little bit in some of the other slides, but this slide just covers the two major types of permits that we have. The Title I permits are construction permits, and those are often more important, even more important for facilities to get in a timely fashion because they often can't do their construction or modification project before they get these Title I permits. And the Title V permits are the operating permits. And we recover our costs for both of these permit categories fully. And that's it for air quality.
Very good. Thank you. We've got a question from Representative Johnson.
Yes, let's start with slide 6. And I was confused as far as the $250,000 going from other
CGS. What is that? Through the chair to Representative Johnson, what we did is we had uncollected authority in our Clean Air Protection Fund, our CAPF fund, that is used for Title V operating permits, and we were bumping up against our authority for our Title I operating permits. So there was an authority swap there, but it was a net zero.
So you overcollected one and undercollected another?
Through the chair to Representative Johnson, we had more authority to collect CAPF revenue than we actually collect, and we had just enough authority to collect our Title I permit fees. So we just we swapped the authorities for the two of those.
Okay, thank you. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
On slide 7, I was curious as far as the savings by the director's office. And, first of all, what savings did you get?
So in the, through the chair to Representative Johnson, we used to have two components. In the former director's office component, there were two individuals, myself and a secretary. When we merged the two components, just so there's now one component in air quality, the secretary now divides half of her time. So half of her time is doing work that would have been in the part of the director's office, and half of her time now she spends supporting the permit group and doing work for our permit group. So that's enabled our permitters to be more efficient in terms of, you know, she formats letters and she does more of the clerical work for them.
And as far as your Title I permitting, is that all electronic at this
point? Through the chair to Representative Johnson, it's not all electronic at this point. We do have, for example, our application forms are available online, and we do have the capacity for people to transmit that application information to us online. But we often find that the applicants, many applicants prefer to still download our forms and fill them out and mail them in.
And one follow-up, and I have to do full disclosure. When my staff and I were looking at the Ludge book here, it seemed like there was a jump between your 2016 actuals and your 18 management plan of almost $2 million. Is that accurate of you?
Through the chair to Representative Johnson, I don't think that we had a jump of $2 million, but I think I may also just pull up our admin services director, Tom Cherian, and may have to pull out our book as well so we could see what you're saying.
Page 36.
Which tab? For the record, my name is Tom Sheeran. I'm the Service Director for Department of Environmental Conservation. Through the chair, Representative Johnson, what you're seeing is we had excess authority. So we eliminated that. I'm assuming that you're referring to the $4.5 million. Versus the $3.4 million actuals. Yes. We had excess authority. What we recorded is the actual collection. That's the difference.
So that's where we're seeing all this.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Through the chair to Representative Johnson, I also wanted to mention in terms of this issue of authorities versus actual collections. Per our state statutes, we only collect our cost. So we review that every 4 years. So even when we have excess authority, we don't charge fees up to those authorities. We only recover the actual costs, and we review those every 4 years.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further questions of the committee? Okay, seeing no questions, appreciate your presentation. We'll move on to the next one. We've got the Division of Prevention and Response to the SPAR program with Kristen Ryan. Kristen, if you could come up and put your name on the record and proceed.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Kristen Ryan. I am the Director of the Division of Spill Prevention and Response for the Department of Environmental Conservation. The Division of Spill Prevention and Response does quite a bit of things, but we primarily focus on preventing spills and making sure responsible parties clean them up when they do occur. That's the essential premises of our work. We do that through two main programs. We have our Contaminated Site Program, which is for spills that have occurred a long time ago and now have remained in place. And then we also regulate the oil industry primarily to to ensure that they don't spill and that when they do, they clean it up immediately so it does not become a contaminated site. We also have a lot of statutory authority to manage the Oil and Hazardous Substance Release Prevention and Response Fund, which is a mouthful, to ensure that work occurs. And I'll go into great detail about how my division is funded in later slides. This slide pretty much says the same thing that I've already mentioned. We're pretty focused in the Contaminated Sites Program on getting property back into reuse and not having it be blighted and remain in the community as a detriment. One example recently was the cleanup of the Wrangell junkyard down in Wrangell. There was a junkyard that an individual had collected car batteries and broke them apart to recycle them with no proper equipment, and there was a lot of lead contamination, extremely high levels of lead. And he actually shipped batteries up from Seattle on barges to do it, and he was bringing them in. And it was in a neighborhood, and the lead was, so there's homes on both sides of the property, and it was leaching out toward the water, the ocean was across the road. So we spent $7 million cleaning that site up just this summer because the responsible party has passed away. Otherwise, we would have asked them to do it. And then, of course, the regulation of the oil industry to make sure that the pipelines are not leaking and that the tankers are following directions and that they all have the capacity to clean up spills when they occur. We spend a lot of time drilling companies and making sure that they've got the right equipment and the right people in the places that it needs to be in compliance with their contingency plans. Our funding is primarily the fund that I've already mentioned. We do receive federal receipt authority for contaminated sites primarily. The majority of our, over 60% of our contaminated sites are on federal property. They've left a lot of contamination, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with. So they fund our efforts to oversee their cleanup. So that's the bulk of my federal receipt authority. I do not have any undesignated general funds any longer. There was a recent, the year before last, we eliminated all the general fund remaining in this division. So I'm completely funded by federal receipt authority and then the response fund. And a small amount, very small amount of fees, which is associated with the cruise ship vessel fund. There's only been one budget change this year that you'll notice, and it's really a technical change of moving some interagency receipt authority out of my division that I wasn't utilizing to another division. So it was a net zero for me. It wasn't money that I was able to collect. Recent cost savings, like I've mentioned, in FY16, the division went through a pretty substantial reorganization to try to save money. We used to have a prevention program, a response program, and the contaminated sites program. We combined the prevention program and the response program into one program and eliminated some positions in the process and ended up saving $620,000 of response account money to do that. The benefit of that was that the employees that are making sure companies can prevent spills are now also the employees that are making sure they're responding to them correctly. So there's a better nexus between the preparation and planning for spills and then the actual response. There was starting to be a little disconnect there. So we haven't seen, I don't believe, a reduction in protection of the environment due to that change or a reduction in our services. We also eliminated what was remaining of UGS in our budget in FY16. Of $208,000. We did have to eliminate two engineers to engineering positions to absorb that cut. We still have three remaining, so we didn't completely eliminate our ability to have a pipeline integrity unit, but we did reduce it pretty substantially. And we did utilize some more prevention account money to offset some of that reduction, so we didn't take too deep of a cut. As I've already mentioned, there's not much fees in my budget. I have an over $19 million budget, and only $430,000 is fee-based, which is associated with the cruise ship vessel fund. It's supposed to cover our costs of regulating cruise ships, make sure they can respond to stay still. statutory authorities for the Division of Spill Prevention and Response, the majority of them came shortly after the Exxon Valdez oil spill. That is the basis for my division almost completely. And it was very clear at that point that the state really wanted to make sure that we had the capacity to abate a release of oil or a hazardous substance, and that capacity is always available. No one wanted another Exxon Valdez, and wanted the state to have the capacity to step in if a company was not handling a spill adequately. The money, the way it was originally drafted in statute, was divided into two accounts. We have a response account and a prevention account. These are both are within the fund that I've mentioned. The response account, they're very similar in what both accounts can be used for. The biggest difference is the response account is supposed to be limited to imminent and substantial threats, whereas the prevention account can be used for more general threats, I guess. That's how I would differentiate the two. The money that comes into the division to fund these two accounts, we have two sources of money. We have a surcharge on barrels of oil coming down the pipeline. We have a 5-cent surcharge on every barrel of oil. That has been the predominant funding stream for the division for a long time. 4 cents of that barrel goes into my prevention account. 1 cent goes into the response account. The response account is capped at $50 million in statute, and hovers around a $48 million. I mean, it varies depending. We utilized it for the Wrangell junkyard cleanup, like I mentioned, because of the imminent threat the lead posed. So that reduced it somewhat, but it's not used frequently. So it tends to stay kind of near its cap. Because the declining revenue from oil over the years, we needed to find another fund source in addition to the 4 cents per barrel to cover our prevention account, which funds our day-to-day work. That's 99% of our work is paid for out of that prevention account. And so recently we added a surcharge on refined fuel. We get almost a penny for every gallon of gasoline, and many of you were here when that happened just 2 years ago. So that is now also going into our accounts to fund the work that we do. And that is generally my budget overview.
Okay, real good. Are there any questions of the committee? Got a question from Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, the 0.095 cents gas tax,
yes,
some may call it, I think it's one of our only revenues of that year. And the 5 cents per barrel?
Yes.
That's been the same since when? And is that since the beginning of the pipeline or since Exxon Valdez? Or maybe you can give me history on the five cents per barrel. And what the price of a barrel was at the time of the 5 cents per barrel.
Okay, Representative Wolf, through the chair. It was not inflation proof when it was originally crafted. It's been 5 cents for 30 years. It has been shifted. It used to be a 3 cent, 2 cent break. They've shifted it to a 1-4 cent in the last, I think, 5 years. But it has remained at 5 cents, and that's been a point that's been discussed heavily for years, if that's the right number.
Okay. Are there any further questions? I got a question from Representative Johnson.
Yes. Are your average expenses over the years, I mean, so this year you're going for about $20 million, and you say the fund is usually at around $48 million, and you carry forward from year to year. Is that pretty much average?
Okay, so Representative Johnson, through the chair, let me explain a little bit better. That $50 million is like a savings account. That is touched infrequently. The 4 cent per barrel and then the almost 1 cent refined fuel tax is what's paying for my annual budget of $19 million a year.
Okay.
And we are collecting a little bit more than we're using every year, and I've underspent. I have not utilized all my funds every year, and the benefit of being in a fund like SPAR is if we do not use all the all of the appropriations given to us in a year, it rolls over to the next year and the fund continues to grow. So we have been underspending every year for the last 3 years and allowing our balance, our bank account to increase. So we are currently projected to have enough, generate enough revenue through this structure to fund SPAR's annual operating costs for the next 5 years without any problems. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any further questions? Real good. Well, seeing no questions, I appreciate the nice, concise presentations for both presentations. And with that, looks like...
Mr. Chairman, okay. May I just mention one other thing? We are required by statute to publish an annual report about all of our expenses and every site we've spent them on. And this has been, we don't provide you hard copies anymore just to save paper, but it's online and we've sent you all an email showing you how to get to it if you want to see every single site and how our money is allocated.
Thank you. Okay. No further questions. Our next Department of Environmental Conservation Finance Subcommittee meeting is scheduled for Thursday, February 16 at 10 a.m. And at that meeting, we'll be hearing from the Division of Water. I'm going to go ahead and adjourn this meeting today. The time is currently 10:36 a.m. Thank you, everyone.
Your host is exiting the conference.